Welcome to another edition of Global Lithium Q&A, where I answer your questions on the lithium industry, and from time to time, we bring on special guests to discuss pertinent issues. Thanks for listening. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Icebreaker, the New Zealand company that brings you the best in merino wool garments. I've been wearing Icebreaker on a daily basis since 2001, and they are definitely my favorite things to wear. So with that, I will move on to this episode, which will be four or five questions, depending on how long I go, and perhaps a rapid fire. Again, it depends on timing. I'm trying to keep these podcasts less than 30 minutes for sure, ideally about 20 minutes. So the first question comes from Down Under, and it's, please comment on Altura's recent announcement of record production and their lack of cost information. Joe, why do you continue to ignore Altura? Well, to my friend from Down Under, first of all, and you can hear Fiona shaking in the background because I don't think she liked the question, but I don't really feel like I ignore Altura so much that I tend to focus on lithium chemical producers for the most part. And from my perspective, Altura is still coming up the curve, ramping up. I've never been a big fan of the partnerships Altura has made. And I did listen to a recording, I think made 2 days ago, by James Brown on a local financial network in Australia, where he stated that that he thought the costs were going to go to sub 300 US a ton. You know, I'm going to comment because I was asked, but I don't see that kind of cost coming out of Altura ever. And I am skeptical about that. But as I've said many times, I believe that any of these new projects that can get through startup, make a consistent product, ultimately are going to be bailed out by rapidly growing demand. And even though there's a present oversupply in the spodumene market long term, I think everybody with a reasonable cost operation in Australia, there's going to be a place for them. I actually do like Altura's neighbors project and partners a little better, but as I say, I'm really not following Altura on a daily basis, so that's about all I have to say about that. Question two. Joe, please comment on the Livent and Albemarle earnings calls. Well, given it's the evening of November 6th, and the Albemarle call isn't until tomorrow morning, I can't really say much about or predict what Luke will say and how Luke will explain the current kind of tough situation Albemarle's in with Wodgina and pricing, etc. I'll save those comments for a podcast I'll probably do on the weekend. As far as Livent, you listened to the call with interest today, as many people did. I think Paul Graves does a very good job of communicating the Livent story. I'm not as positive on their situation as, you know, obviously as CEO, he's got to tell a positive story. I guess I'll just make a couple of comments and then refer you to a LinkedIn article I published today called Lithium Gap Year, where I say a little bit more about Livent. But and I've been sent specific questions, and again, Fiona has come in and is shaking. So I don't know if she liked this question either. Okay. Well, now she's moving towards the mic. All right. So let's get back to the task at hand. I found that whole 4,000 tons of hydroxide inventory being held over to next year. You know, I'm not saying what was said is not factual, but what I am hearing through the grapevine is that it's more about some orders that didn't come through than it is about a strategic inventorying so they can meet all the demand next year. And, you know, whether what I heard is correct or not, I don't know, but I do have pretty good sources around the world. So let's just say that I'm going to accept what Paul said, but leave open for the fact that oftentimes when difficult situations arise, an explanation has to be ginned up. And that maybe that's the case. As for the other things, I also find that this MOU with LG, I mean, let's face it, Livent does have a legacy as one of the top hydroxide producers. But honestly, the majors, Ganfeng, for instance, Tianqi, for instance, have already signed long-term agreements with LG. So clearly, Livent, who doesn't actually have a contract as it was portrayed today, but only an MOU, I don't see that as really a big deal. Having spoken to LG multiple times, I know that they've been very concerned about pretty much signing up as many reasonable quality producers as they can in their portfolio. So I'm not thinking that this move by Livent is coming from a position of strength, particularly since they clearly weren't the first or second choice for contracting. So let's see what happens. I've been pretty candid about the fact that I actually have invested in Livent when the stock got to very low prices. I spent 23 years of my lithium career at the predecessor company, FMC Lithium. I want Livent to succeed, but I firmly believe that a hydroxide only strategy with respect to the battery market. They obviously do make butyllithium and metal, but as far as the cathode market, they've become a one-trick pony making hydroxide. And right now, everybody else is rushing to build hydroxide capacity, whether it's Albemarle or SQM or Tianqi. Ganfeng's already a very large producer and also will be expanding again. So when I left the company, FMC had the largest hydroxide capacity on the planet. Now they're nowhere near the largest hydroxide capacity on the planet, even after their expansions. So again, let me just close this by saying I wish the best for Livent. I think being a one trick pony in the battery market is risky. I also took some of the comments about, because of the way they handle things, they don't really have the shelf life risk others do. I didn't think that comment on today's call passed the sniff test. But let's give Paul Graves the benefit of the doubt. He is an eloquent spokesman for Livent. And, I have my doubts about certain things, but I'm going to leave it at that. Again, I'm not sitting where he sits, so I don't have all the facts that he has in front of me. Question 3, Joe, what does Bolivia canceling the lithium development agreement with a German company mean for battery development in Europe? Well, this is pretty easy to answer because essentially I think it doesn't mean anything. Bolivia, in my mind, is not going to be a player in lithium in the next, for the foreseeable future. Let's just put it that way. The ridiculous legacy of people going to Bolivia to try to develop the uni goes back really to the 1980s when my former employer, FMC Lithium, tried to work a deal with the Bolivian government and spent years negotiating and ultimately moved down to Argentina and developed Hombre Muerto. And I have been involved with various companies from Asia that have, you know, looked closely at Bolivia. It always seems to end the same way. And as long as they have the kind of government that they have now and the kind of ridiculous demands they make on potential producers, I think we can say there's a lot of lithium in the ground in Bolivia, and it's probably going to stay there for a very, very long time. So I think when Europe looks at their situation, I think a second part to this question was, does the Bolivian situation help make the European projects that are out there more viable? And I think my friend Bernard may have asked that question on Twitter today. And, you know, I think time will tell with that. I think, honestly, that when we look at, people are all fixated on the first million tons, you know, around 2025, demand getting to a million tons. But, you know, as I've mentioned before, my friend Chris Reeds, you know, put that question out to me when I last saw him in Perth in May, was, Joe, why isn't anybody talking about the second million tons, which is going to come faster? So, you know, I think when you look long term, you know, maybe the projects in Europe will gain traction. But again, I don't see that as a near-term thing. So I think European battery development will be more focused on pack and cells and, you know, cathode, and the lithium supply for cathode will be left to the parts of the supply chain that are currently supplying it. And that would be Asia doing most of the cathode, some of it spilling into other regions, and South America and the Australian-China axis supplying most of the lithium raw materials for the near term. So, yeah, again, I don't think Bolivia is just doing what Bolivia does, and canceling an agreement is just kind of business as usual. Question four is from Charlotte, North Carolina, which is familiar ground for me because that's where I'm sitting right now. Joe, why can't you be fair to Albemarle, and why do you have to constantly criticize their CEO? Okay, fair question. You know, first of all, I think if you look at my commentary on Albemarle, which I admit for the most part is negative, but I always say that Albemarle has a couple of the best assets in the lithium world, that being their position in Chile in the Atacama and their position at Greenbushes at Talison. And so, I mean, I readily admit that the company has great assets, but I also feel that they have at best mediocre management. At best, you know, they've talked about their business with a lack of candor that is rarely criticized by what I would characterize as lapdog analysts on their calls. And, you know, we'll get a chance to verify that tomorrow, because tomorrow morning is their third quarter call. So I think that, you know, and again, I'll refer you to a LinkedIn piece that I published today, where I talk about Albemarle, and I talk about the fact that after my commentary on the third quarter earnings call and what Luke says about, you know, spending $1 billion plus in Australia, and then the day the JV's announced with MinRes announcing that they're not going to be operating that asset anytime soon. I mean, that's not an insignificant mistake. Their pricing policy has been a very strong negative on their situation, and they can portray it as long-term strategy all they want, but the data doesn't bear that out. So honestly, I just think I'm calling it as I see it. I've probably erred too much to bringing the personalities into it, but as I move forward, I think I'll talk less about Luke and more about just the performance of Albemarle, which I believe, with a relative standard, with the assets they have, has been abysmal. So that's really all I can say about that. I don't believe that if you really read closely to what I have written about Albemarle, especially on my LinkedIn pieces, I think most of it passes the test of pretty reasonable analysis. So, I mean, again, I can agree to disagree with this listener. But again, I will continue to call them as I see them, and, you know, for better or for worse. Question 5. Joe, why do you not criticize Ganfeng? You seem to be critical of most other major companies, but not Ganfeng. Why is that? And this question actually came from somebody very highly placed in the lithium world, and a company that's seen me criticize them in the past. I took the question seriously and reflected a little bit, and I responded in this way, because, you know, the other piece of this was that it was something to the effect of comparing the Ganfeng's investment in Bacanora to Albemarle's investment in Wodgina, or Wodgina, however you prefer to pronounce that. And I just found that kind of comparison totally specious, given that the Albemarle investment of total between the securing the resource and developing a chemical plant well over $1 billion, and Ganfeng's kind of de minimis, you know, teens, millions, or, you know, investment in Bacanora, which is really kind of inventorying a long-term asset that, you know, maybe years before it's developed. I thought that's just almost comical to me, that somebody who is a, you know, a highly placed executive in a lithium company would put that was the best shot he could take at Ganfeng. And that's the way I responded. It's just that it's crazy for anybody to compare what Albemarle did with a totally misbegotten investment of over $1 billion in Western Australia with Ganfeng's kind of one semester of state tuition fee type of investment in Bacanora. So honestly, yeah, I've made it clear that, you know, I'm an investor in SQM when the price is below 25. So even though I have some criticisms of recent activity by SQM, I still am positive on their long-term prospects. I've said, and again, not to beat the horse to death, but I'll refer you back to my post today on LinkedIn, where I basically say all the big four are going to do well in the future. It's just a matter of degrees. But the reason I don't criticize Gangfin is they haven't made a major screw up. So I don't find anything that, is comparable to some of the boneheaded plays that Albemarle's made or Tianchi's, what I consider a misbegotten, investment at a premium price for 24% of SQM when they don't get much for that. So, again, I call them as I see them. And in this case, very unapologetically, when and if Gangfin screws up, you'll hear about it here. Okay, I'm going to squeeze in a rapid-fire question. And this comes actually from Singapore. And it's, Joe, if you could have dinner with any two famous people that are currently alive, who would they be? And this is probably going to seem like an odd answer, but I would have dinner with the Dalai Lama and Joe Rogan. And I will just say that I think that would be just a very interesting combination. I think the Dalai Lama is a fascinating character. And even as a practicing Catholic, I didn't pick Pope Francis. I've always kind of had a fascination with the Dalai Lama and his life. And as an avid listener of the Joe Rogan podcast, he's talked to so many people that I have benefited from a hearing on his podcast that I just think the combination of the, just his breadth of having interviewed so many people. And I think that the Dalai Lama's personality and Joe Rogan's personality would really make things very interesting. So that's my answer. This has been another episode of Global Lithium Q&A. For more on the lithium industry, you can follow me on Twitter at Global Lithium, on LinkedIn, where I've published more than 100 articles on the lithium space, or at www.lithiumpodcast.com for the Global Lithium Podcast, which I co-host with Emily Hirsch. And it's also available on most major podcast outlets. Once again, thanks for listening.